This week, we hear from illustrious Brother Harrison for an all-new Masonic Minute. A 50-year pin? A jewel? Does it matter? Well, let's leave it to Steve. Then, an interview with past Grandmaster Akram Elias, 33rd degree, about the Masonic Legacy Society and its mission to fulfill the Masonic promise.
And the promise is clear. Freemasonry will help you better yourself. So we need to fulfill that promise.
We ask fundamental questions about America.
Is it possible for this kind of diverse people to live in one nation state, government of the people, by the people, for the people?
And also, what has Freemasonry done for the United States?
It has advanced the human condition like no other country has ever had in the history of humanity.
Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back. This is episode number 448. This week on the program, as you heard in the intro, we've got a great topic for you this week, the Masonic Legacy Society. But first, before we get into the awesome interview with illustrious Brother Akram Elias, we have another illustrious brother who would like to bring you the Masonic Minute. But before we get into that, I just want to go ahead and give a huge thanks to all of our supporters, our producers, fellows, and contributors to the program. During this pandemic time, we're not doing any ads for the program, so I just want to say thank you to those people who make this show happen week after week, month after month, year after year. If you would like to learn how to become a supporter of the program, please head on over to WCYpodcast.com and check it all out. In addition, you can check out Our Friends, a little section on there on the website as well, to check out other ways to support the show. In the news, well, it looks like a lot of Masonic lodges are starting to plan for opening later this year. September, I'm hearing, for some lodges. August for some. Here in Illinois, we are probably, if I'm going to make an educated guess, I would guess that people are going to start meeting in lodges without visitors. I would most likely say in the August timeline. So, that looks good for us. And hopefully everything will work out really well, especially considering September is MasonicCon Chicago, more toward the mid/late end of the month. So I think that will work out just fine. We're still looking at having an in-person event, so no worries there. If, for whatever reason, we deem it unacceptable or unable to have an in-person event, you know we will do a digital pivot, and it's going to be amazing. So don't sweat it. It's still on. No matter what, it's still that weekend. We're just going to make the pivot if we need to. Now, before we hear from illustrious Brother Harrison, I have to tell you all that I was really intrigued with the Ray V. Denslow versus Cowles story that you may have heard about a little bit in our last time we had illustrious Brother Harrison on for an interview to talk about the Denslow books. Now, since then, he put out a Masonic Minute on our program where he talked about the entire episode and how shocking it was he was going to do a presentation at MasonicCon Chicago. Well, as every good presenter does, you have to at least put it out somewhere before the main event to get a taste of what it's like and to go through it. And I was lucky enough to sit in on a Zoom presentation of this amazing presentation, Clash of the Titans, which illustrious Brother Harrison has put together. All I can say is, wow, I think you all will enjoy it. Really look forward to it. It is a key reason, one of the biggest reasons, in my opinion, to come to MasonicCon Chicago, to see that presentation. You're not going to believe what you hear. So with that, let's get into this week's Masonic Minute with illustrious brother, Stephen L. Harrison.
Sometime last year, Midnight Freemason founder Todd Creason wrote a piece about a brother who had objected to being called Bro. It brought to mind a somewhat similar experience I had when I was editor of the Missouri Freemason magazine. As do many Masonic magazines, ours included a section in the back containing news and events from lodges around the state. Many of these were stories about lodges which had recognized brothers for 50 years of service. On one occasion, I got a rather scathing letter from a brother with an intense objection to the fact I had called the award a 50-year pin. In his letter, he was adamant about the significance of the award and insisted it should always be called a 50-year jewel. He made impassioned points about how brothers receiving that award had served the fraternity for nearly a lifetime and deserved more respect than having the award called a pin. The fact is, I agreed with everything he said about the 50-year members. They were, in fact, among our most esteemed brothers, and they had served the fraternity well. They deserved every bit of the respect the author of the letter called for. So I wrote him back and told him that. But I added that I didn't see the word pin as derogatory, and said I didn't think it detracted from the significance of the award. I noted it is the term brothers commonly use when they talk about or present it. I also pointed out that I didn't write those articles. Rather, the members of the lodges themselves wrote them and sent them in. The articles almost always referred to the award as a 50-year pin, confirming how common that terminology was. I might also note Ray Denslow, one of our most prolific and respected Masonic authors, called it a 50-year button. So in the magazine, I continued to allow authors to use the terminology 50-year pin. But that isn't the end of the story. Todd's article eloquently talked about respect within the craft. While I still believe calling the award a 50-year pin is not disrespectful, I can't help thinking about that brother's letter almost every time I see the award presented. I am persuaded that the word jewel may elevate its status or the meaning behind it just a bit. That pin and the brother who wears it certainly deserve respect for his service to this fraternity. So I find myself more and more referring to it as a jewel. That letter I received years ago was caustic in tone, but I am increasingly grateful to the brother who wrote it. He gave me something to think about. I might add, just a few months ago, I became eligible to receive my 20-year jewel. For the Wentz KMU podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
All right, major thanks goes out to illustrious Brother Harrison for all he does for this podcast. If you like what you heard, check out all the books on the section of our website, wcypodcast.com. Click on the bookstore. You'll see all of the books there that he has written. You can buy them there. And the best part is, when you read them, it's like Harrison is in your head. It's really awesome. Be sure to check out the Missouri Lodge of Research's website, where you can purchase a membership and get copies of those Denslow books, or you can check it out on the Kindle store as well. Now let's get into this enlightening interview with illustrious brother Akram Elias. All right, everybody, thank you for joining us once more on this episode of Whence Came You. Today we have a very special guest. We have past Grandmaster, illustrious past Grandmaster, Brother Akram Elias. He's the past Grandmaster of Washington, D.C. Brother Akram, thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's great to be here with you at Right Bush for Brother Johnson.
So we have talked a little bit on this show in the past. I have mentioned the Masonic Legacy Society. And only, you know, we had been working on this project for a few years before we actually got to a point that felt like, hey, maybe it's time, it's now good, we should talk a little bit about it, we should feel okay with sharing things, and we have done that. And in doing that, we've gotten a lot of feedback in terms of the what it is, what it means, and we've gotten a lot of great feedback on how important people think this is. But before we get into the Masonic Legacy Society, which really is the product of a vision you had for something to enhance Freemasonry. I would love to get a background on you a little bit as a past Grand Master of Washington, D.C. So, Brother Akram, can you tell us how you came into Freemasonry and your time into the Grand East? That'd be awesome.
Sure, no, I'd love to. And thank you again for having me on this podcast. Brother RJ, my interest in Freemasonry started when I was in my teens. I always loved history. The Middle Ages was of particular interest to me. Chivalric groups like the Knights Templar were a great attraction and of great curiosity, you know, to me. So delving deeper into that led me to learn about Freemasonry and the possible connection or lack thereof, depending how you look at it, between those chivalric groups and the Society of Free and Accepted Masons. So I was really drawn to it quite early. My early 20s, I started reading more about it. It took me a while, however, before I knocked at the door of Freemasonry, because I was working as a contractor with the Department of State for about 10 years, traveling a lot, staying very little in Washington, so not really be able to be part of an institution and contribute to it and benefit from it. So it wasn't until later on that in a conversation with a dear friend of mine who passed away since, we were talking about some of the mystery schools, and the conversation came to Freemasonry, and he said, "Wow, well, you know, I am Freemason, and if you're really interested in that, I'm happy to sponsor you." And that was in 1996. So he did sponsor my petition in Potomac Lodge No. 5, the oldest lodge in Washington, D.C., and one of the founding lodges of our Grand Lodge, and which means in Georgetown. And ever since I joined, it's been quite a journey, you know, for me. Now, as I joined and started looking into it, I discovered that both of my grandparents on my maternal and paternal sides were Freemasons, but I did not know that before. But then all the stories that I had heard about their character and the way they conducted themselves started making sense. So that's how really my journey started. Late brother Stephen Trevino was the one who sponsored me, sponsored my petition into Potomac Lodge.
That's a fascinating story. For our listeners out there, they may detect a slight accent that you have. So where are you originally from?
Oh, yes, I do have an accent, no question about it. My origins are from Lebanon, the country of the cedars. So you can see also when I became a Freemason and learning about the connection between Hiram Abiff, who was half Phoenician, therefore Lebanese. The Phoenicians are the ancestors of who are called today Lebanese. So he was half Israelite and half Phoenician. And of course, Hiram, king of Tyre, which is in South Lebanon, and then King Solomon of Israel. So that connection and building the temple and the cedars of Lebanon was became quite a romantic, interesting, and uplifting, you know, allegory for me. So that's where my roots are from, Lebanon. I came to the United States when I was about 17 and a half, basically after the Civil War had started. Came here to study, always thinking that I would, you know, go back and try to contribute as a young idealist would do, try to see how you can make, you know, your community, your society, and in that case, you know, my old country better. But then, you know, I stayed here. I met a woman who transformed my life. She became my wife. So we met in 1983, and we've been married since 1987. So she became my partner and later my brother also in Freemasonry. So I ended up staying in the United States. But when it came to making the choice Do I stay in America or end up going back to Lebanon or somewhere else? And I said somewhere else, from my extended family, on my parents' side, they do have the French citizenship. And till now, my mom, lives, and I have a sister and a brother who live in France. So the question was, where do I go? And when I decided to stay in America, I made the conscious decision to really study America. I said, if I'm going to make a request and become a citizen of this country and pledge allegiance to this country, I need to know what this country is all about. And so that got me into studying the Great Experiment while I was studying Freemasonry.
So anybody who has never met you is somewhat at a disadvantage that I'm really hoping to change the disparity in knowledge you have that our listeners may have here, because it's a privilege to hear you speak about America the way you do, as you have such a unique perspective on it, having come into the country and then joining the timeless fraternity that we are in, that this craft that has such unique and undeniable ties to the founding of the Great Experiment. And so take that as a compliment. And I'm really hoping that through this interview, our listeners really feel it. And I think you all will. Obviously, you went through the East and you became the Grand Master of Freemasons in Washington, D.C., the capital, one of the most, arguably, the most diverse communities within the United States. So that had to be interesting in and of itself within the craft. I would imagine somebody like myself coming from, Southern California, surrounded by Southern Californians, and then moving into the Chicagoland area, we've got diversity, but not like it is there in Washington, D.C. That had to be pretty unique.
Oh, no question about it. I must admit that I was quite fortunate that I was led to a knock on the door of Freemasonry in our nation's capital. Now, let me say, to me, what was most fascinating was really the journey on the way to the chair of King Solomon, to being Grand Master of the Freemasons in Washington, D.C. Of course, being Grand Master was a crowning year, wonderful, and I'll talk a bit about that in a moment, but the journey to me was really the most fascinating. And the reason for that is that I looked at it as, in my case, it was an 11-year journey, and every year was to build. So put some building blocks. As a free builder, that's what you do. So the idea is not to wait till you are in the office for you to do something. It is along the way working with others who are before you and creating that special working relationship so we can always build together, because to build a temple, to build a cathedral, continue building our noble craft, it takes all of us working together. So that bond was so important. And in the process, our Grand Lodge really changed a lot. So, yes, our nation's capital was quite diverse, but we did not have that diversity reflected really in our Grand Lodge. The change started in about 1990, and I'm someone who became quite active in that change, and it started in 1990. It is because of a unique set of circumstances. We had a number of brothers of Iranian origin who had to leave their mother country and take Freemasonry with them as a result of the Islamic Revolution that took place in 1979. So, and they wanted to really preserve their Masonic heritage using their ritual in their own mother tongue. So in 1990, a bunch of those brothers who had affiliated with our Grand Lodge, worked tirelessly for about 3 to 5 years to convince the leadership and the rank and file in our Grand Lodge to open the door and let them have a lodge that would work in the Farsi language using the English emulation ritual to preserve their heritage. That took place in 1990. And as brothers from other lodges started attending that lodge, and when they did, of course, the brethren of that lodge would very graciously move from their Farsi language to English for everyone to understand what was happening. And the brethren were really very impressed by the quality and the level of seriousness of the work exemplified by those brethren. So it became contagious. And 2 years later, we started a lodge. So we call these lodges bilingual. In other words, they can use two languages, English being always one of the two. And in 1992, we started a Spanish-speaking lodge called Alianza Fraternal Americana. The following year, another lodge called La France Lodge, that became the bridge between American Masonry in Washington, D.C. and Freemasonry in France and throughout the Francophone world. So we started through that also establishing our international fraternal connections to Freemasonry, regular Freemasonry around the world. And the list goes on. And we've created so many lodges since that time. And as a result of this process, really two things happened. First, definitely a much more diverse craft. We literally have the Masons who can trace their origins to about 50-some countries. We have brethren who are representative of all the major religions. So we have Jews, Orthodox, conservative, liberal. We have Christians of all the various denominations you can imagine. We have Muslims, both Sunni and Shia, and Druze. We have Buddhists. We have a Sikh. So the diversity started growing. That's one. And second, the seriousness that was basically introduced in the craft, as I mentioned earlier, became contagious. So more people started focusing on, okay, what is this all about? And this is what really attracted me, and that's where I developed my passion for Freemasonry. What really lies behind the ceremonies and the rituals? Why do we go through that? What is the purpose? So that journey was incredible, and started investing myself over the years before getting to the East in Masonic education, when I basically understood that it is only by deciphering the allegories and the symbols that one can start touching the essence of Freemasonry, which is to help a person better himself by becoming freer, truly free, and a builder of better self and a better community. So Masonic education became my passion, and the motto that I chose when I became Grandmaster was symbolized by the triangle, the equilateral triangle, and the three E's, or the triple E, with engage, enlighten, and energize. So I would call being the Grandmaster was really, you know, the culmination of a wonderful journey. And after that, as happens often in Freemasonry, we are such a diverse fraternity with all kinds of appendant bodies between the York Rite and the Scottish Rite and the Shriners. And many approached me, you know, to join in and become an officer or a head of this body or head of that body. And I made the conscience this choice not to, for one very important reason. The passion that I developed for the essence of the craft, I wanted to devote all of my time after having served as Grand Master to spread that passion without having my hands tied, without having to deal with the bureaucracies and the politics and everything else that comes in with running organizations. So I took that concept of free builder really to heart. And what can I do? How can I give back to this wonderful initiatic society that helped truly transform me as a better person? How can I give back except by promoting and diffusing that knowledge and that concept of freedom as much as possible?
I think what was interesting is, so about 2.5 almost 3 years ago, you had invited a few guys out, and we really had a talk about some of this stuff. And I really feel like that was a turning point for a lot of folks in understanding just exactly, not about, say, Freemasonry by itself, because I think a lot of us knew what Freemasonry really was and what it's about. But I think the unique perspective that you gave on it was something that made a lot of guys double down. It made a lot of guys really, it went from knowing about it to feeling it. The reason you're on the show, aside from being an amazing example of what can the success in Freemasonry, is to talk about the Masonic Legacy Society. Now, anybody out there who's listening, maybe you've been to our website already, maybe you haven't, but I would urge you to check it out. You can read about what it is on the website, but from you, Brother Akram, can you give us, in your own words, what the Masonic Legacy Society is?
This is an amazing, truly an amazing initiative. But I tell you first how this whole idea came. So, you know, Providence works in mysterious ways, as we all know. Somebody contacted me a few years ago from the John E. Fetzer Memorial Trust and said, we have found your name as a person who knows a lot about Freemasonry. You have appeared on so many television shows, programs, documentaries. And we are the trustees of the legacy of a man called John E. Fetzer. And we found a lot of things that he left behind. They seem to be pointing to Freemasonry, but we don't fully understand that yet. The gentleman built an incredible institution and had a very successful life. Would you be kind enough to come and visit with us and help us decipher this and maybe put the pieces together? And I did, and I went to Kalamazoo, Michigan, and from the first moment I was struck by the symbolism, how that man, very successful Michiganer, you know, owner of the Tigers, a radio pioneer, tried to really live by those values, has written a lot of personal essays, correspondence with his wife, talked about Freemasonry, and really tried to exemplify, in other words, live as a builder, some of those principles. So I was taken by that, and I said, oh my God, we keep talking in Freemasonry about furthest we go is like, President, you know, and Brother Harry S. Truman, and then we go all the way back to George Washington. But he's somebody who lived really in the late 20th century, the 20th century, and through a good part of it. But that's a role model. Why can't we, I wonder how many other gems are like that? So the relationship started with that, and one thing led to another about helping them preserve the legacy. And as we were doing that, something hit me. And what it was how can we really help revive the deep interest in Freemasonry across the United States? And why I said across the United States? Because this is where my life experience really made this connection between America, the Great Experiment, and Freemasonry as an initiatic society made the connection so clear to me. As I mentioned earlier, I, having made the decision to seek citizenship in the United States, I had to study America. And this led me into understanding the Great Experiment. And of course, that led me to know how many of the founding fathers were also Freemasons and the American revolutionaries were. But that is not what really was of greatest interest to me. Not that so many were Freemasons, but how the Great Experiment was put together based on fundamental Masonic values. It is incredible. It, for the first time, Brother RJ, for the first time, in the written annals of history, an experiment in human governance was created and sustained. For the first time ever, individuals who speak different languages, who are of different nationalities, from different cultures and ethnicities, got together and basically said, is it possible for this kind of diverse people to live in one nation state under their own rule of law without needing an absolutist monarch to rule over them? In other words, government of the people, by the people, for the people, under a rule of law, with individual freedom for all. No question, that great experiment, when it started, it was limited in scope. We did have slavery in this country. Women were excluded. Catholics and Jews were persecuted. And every generation of Americans in this great experiment expanded it and made it more inclusive. So one way to look at America is that those great foundational ideals, which came straight from Freemasonry, helped sustain the experiment, coming now closely to 250 years, and was able, with its resiliency, to overcome civil war, to overcome the divisiveness, you know, of segregation and turbulent 60s, etc. It's amazing. So this experiment in human governance, directly connected to Freemasonry, to me became a focal point. Okay, in 2026, which is in about 5.5 years from now, the United States, this great experiment, will be celebrating its 250th anniversary. So what's going to happen? Are we going to simply try to have fireworks and celebrations? Are we going to remain divided and be divided, maybe not be able to celebrate that way? Or are we going to be able to get together and really focus on the great achievements of this great experiment, with its ups and downs, but the great achievements, because it has advanced the human condition like no other country has ever had in the history of humanity. And the power behind the great experiment is that America is much more than a country, it is much more than a people, it's much more than a land, it's really an idea. And the idea is that no matter where a person was born, what religion he or she was given, what ethnicity, what language, what social class, that person can say, I choose to be this. I want to be that. And this is fascinating when it comes to the evolution of the human condition. So as a Freemason, I have to give back to the fraternity, to the society of Freemasons, because it helped transform me, really helped me understand what true freedom is about and how to be a constructive builder. And America gave me the opportunity and the environment, the sustainable environment, to fulfill myself, to really develop myself, and to enjoy this Freemasonry. So I have to give back to America as well. So I'm indebted to both the Society of Freemasonry and to America, the Great Experiment. So in my very humble way, the best mechanism, or the best way for me to give back, is to give back to both where they really connect. And this led to the genesis of the Masonic Legacy Society by saying, what I need is to find other Freemasons who see the true power of Freemasonry, and that is its ability to transform people and make them better. You know, this experiment needs engaged, enlightened citizens more than any other experiment in governance around the globe. Because we have a system with relatively limited government, where civil society takes the initiative. Citizens are supposed to be partners with their government in governance. If we don't have citizens with the character, the values that are able to be free, protect that freedom, engage others, not simply be activists, but also engage others who may think totally differently from them, but to somehow be able to finally work together and continue building this experiment. The idea was, we need Freemasonry now in America more than ever. And the craft the words that I've been using is that the craft had gone dormant. The potential of Freemasonry was asleep, and it simply had to be awakened. But it had to be awakened quickly and spread contagiously like fire with the zeal of the values, the passions of what Freemasonry can do to help us as Americans take this great experiment to the next level. So this was the genesis of it, the big picture, the big vision, if you want, and then started connecting with wonderful Freemasons who take the craft seriously and understand how important it is to build citizens with that kind of character. And I got to meet wonderful brethren like yourself, like Jeff Dunning, like Mike, like Baruti, and brethren who are listed, I guess, on the site of the Masonic Legacy Society.
The first time we had all come together was, you just know, it was something really weird and special. The collective consciousness in the room with these guys was just outstanding. And I think we achieve that at every lodge in America, when the true passion of Freemasonry is being worked toward, people are utilizing Freemasonry in the ways that we write about in the document and guide. We talked about where the vision of this came from, and from the Masonic Legacy Society, you know, it's a website, and what we have is the document, and the guide was the product. This document is a process by which we lay out a way to think about and reflect on the Masonic working tools in particular, but symbols, elements of Freemasonry, and it's geared for at the entered apprentice level, and the hopes that somebody can then take that and apply it at the fellow craft level, at the master mason level. Heck, I mean, I've even heard of some guys now who've come back and said the way the Scottish Rite degrees are with some of the things that they talk about in terms of virtues. They use this to think about and to reflect on some of that even. So it's widespread, but also you don't have to be a Mason to grab this document and the guide. You can be a profane. And I think that was really important. With so many groups out there, Akram, that come out with products and things and magazines and podcasts and things, what really seemed to make this one different, this particular product different, was the universality of the quote-unquote product, right? I found initially when we launched it, some of the first questions that I received were, well, how relevant is this in my jurisdiction? How relevant is that for this or that? And it was a strange thing to be able to say for the first time, 100%. Not one piece of this is not compatible with Freemasonry. Can you tell us a little bit about why the drive for the universal approach rather than maybe going after some things that may have been slightly outside the fraternity in terms of scope or symbolically?
Brother RJ, and we did, as you mentioned, the collective mindset, the insights, the working together. We started gathering and held a number of workshops over almost 3 years, 2.5 years to come up with this. So there were like three very important points in answering your question. The first one was fundamental. We did not want to have the Masonic Legacy Society be an institutionalized organization. In other words, set up an organization and create a board and administration and have it run, because then it becomes one other organization within the family of Freemasonry. This is a very important point. The idea was we want to promote the true concept of freedom, and by that we mean diffusing light without having to control anything, without having to control outcomes, without having to try to structure people. It's to basically diffuse the same way the sun diffuses its light, it's to diffuse that knowledge and people would take that knowledge, be engaged with it, activated by it, and would unleash their own experience of masonry and engage others and so forth. So that concept of freedom to create behind it like a community of freedom, if you want, that is not structured. So that's number one. Number two, in order to obviously do that, given the diversity of rituals that exists in our country and around the world, we put in a lot of time and effort to identify things that no matter what the ritual is, no matter what the jurisdiction may be, they can really connect with the framework and the concept of how we are approaching Freemasonry and Masonic education. So yes, it took a lot of, but it was not on purpose, because we want this approach to be understood and espoused by as many as people want to across the country without having to deal with those hurdles. And the third very important point in the way we structured our approach to the Masonic Legacy Society, we wanted to have two target audiences. First target audience are the Masons, the newly made Masons, newly entered apprentices, fellow crafts, and master Masons. And as you mentioned, we focus on elements that can be discussed openly about the entered apprentice, about the lodge on the first degree, things that we can talk about publicly and that people can go back to their own rituals and decipher them accordingly. So we did that because really the entered apprentice is the fundamental step. It is the initiatic first step down the journey. And once a person becomes a brother, once that person is initiated into our society, and the entered apprentice degree, no matter what type of ritual it is, does provide really great information about the entire ecosystem of Freemasonry. So you touch the person as an EA, you know, as you correctly stated earlier, that person will hopefully build that practice and apply it to the second degree, third, etc. There is also a second audience, and that is the people who should be knocking at the door of Freemasonry. So by presenting who we are, what the fraternity as an initiatic society is about, the hope is that people who are attracted to that, who are not Freemasons, may be interested in becoming Freemasons, but they're becoming for also those right reasons. The idea is that this overall, with these three fundamental points, we can create or generate a dynamic that can help awaken existing Masons, attract new blood into the fraternity that houses or is much more ready to understand the deeper essence of Freemasonry. And the hope is that if we're activated and it gains traction over the next 5 years, maybe we would have enough awakened citizens who are Freemasons in this country who can act as bridge builders as we get closer to celebrate the 250th anniversary of America.
Wonderfully, wonderfully stated. I would just say that when we talk about a Mason or somebody in the beginning starting to use this document, this guide, in working with their own, to assist in the transformative work, my question is, what do you think this particular practice is going to do for Freemasonry? There's a lot of lodges in the United States that, as you politely use the term, the philosophy has gone dark or has been put to sleep. What's the likelihood or what's your prognosis if a significant number of Masonic lodges and individual brothers use the document and guide? What's that look like?
Well, I cannot predict really the future, but I can tell you the transformative power of this document and guide is incredible. I can tell you from small experiences that I've had with some of my brethren, let's say here in the Washington area and some places around the country. People are devouring this stuff. And the reason why they're devouring, because it is very simple. And this is fundamental to understand this approach. Number one, the focus is always on Freemasonry. You know, Freemasonry is defined universally as a peculiar system of morality veiled in allegory and illustrated by symbols. So in other words, by definition, every aspect of the ritual and ceremonies of Freemasonry has always an overt and exoteric aspect, and then an esoteric. And esoteric meaning concealed, hidden, that has deeper meanings. Because the system uses allegories and symbols. So by definition, for a man or a woman Mason, for a Mason to transform himself to become better as a Mason, he needs to decipher the esoteric aspects. Because that is the only way the transformation can take place. I mean, what do I do with the plum? What do I do with the gavel? What does the moon and sun mean? If I focus only on the exoteric, in other words, what the ritual says openly, overtly, that is going to be very difficult for me to use to help improve myself and to have any relevance to my life experience right now in the 21st century. So then the ritual of Freemasonry would appear like an old, you know, arcane kind of thing that forget about it, so the fraternity, the society would turn into a simple fraternal group where people like to get together and have some good time together, and that's it. So deciphering it is very important. However, once one starts talking about the esoteric layers in Freemasonry, and there are many layers, one can easily get into aspects of esotericism that may also lead the person to all different types of mystery schools, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that, except that to activate the Mason who has come, and we gave him a promise, and the promise is clear. Freemasonry will help you better yourself. So we need to fulfill that promise. And therefore, the approach of the document and the guide are strictly focused on the ritual of Freemasonry and how the use of those tools can help awaken that person without having to go into any other type of mystery schools or esoterica, etc. So this was intentionally done to show that it is not a difficult process. This is not magical. The ritual of Freemasonry does the trick. It's an incredible ritual. So once one gets into it and starts assimilating it, the transformation happens within oneself. And once one tastes that, the person would want more of it. At least I've been sensing this from this experiences that I've had. So while I cannot predict, I would say the more this spreads, the more there would be fundamental shift in consciousness and positive transformation within our craft. It doesn't mean that every lodge and every Freemason, you know, these awakenings and shifts in consciousness do not take many people really to be involved in. It takes always a smaller percentage, a very small percentage of awakened individuals to impact others. And then you have the ripple effect. That is why one of our main objectives in the MLS is to organize workshops to attract as many Masons from across the country who are willing to be facilitators. In other words, take that document and share it with others and be able to facilitate contemplative conversations, sharing insights about how the such applications of Freemasonry really help you become a better person. So this is very real. This is not baloney or BS. It is very, very real, and I can speak of myself. I can tell you this application, this approach, practical applications of the teachings of Freemasonry, as we describe them in this document and with the accompanying guide, in my case, have truly transformed my life and are continuing to do so. And they help build within the Mason a sense of strength. That is the true strength that the pillar of the senior warden represents. Very different from the strength that people refer to in the world of the profane. That inner strength becomes unbelievable.
As you were going through some of this, you know, you really touched on a lot of questions that I had planned to ask you. And I think it just happens because of the necessarily how we explain what this is. And there may be people listening to this right now who hadn't heard of the Masonic Legacy Society yet. But just to give everybody out there some key couple pieces about it. Number one, the document and guide we are so serious about, and as Akram pointed out, it's as free as the sun. There is no cost or anything to get the document. You just go to the website, you fill out a form, and it gets emailed to you. And not only that, we have gotten the document translated into several languages, and more are coming. Currently, you can go there today, and you can download it in English, you can download it in French, you can get it in Russian, and you can get it in Spanish. And Hebrew is coming, German, I have Portuguese. Yeah, we've got all these languages coming, and in essence, what you mentioned also is the idea that we're looking for facilitators and people who are interested in this kind of thing. So when you go to the website, there's contact information, that kind of thing, and if you download the document and you're really into it, feel free to shoot us an email and we can talk to you about it. What you'll see also is a little kind of map that shows you where people are in the United States, where we've already had workshops where we're putting these things together to have these people go through it and so that they know exactly what it entails in practice. So again, that's just a few insights. How many people have downloaded the document? I think we're at over 600 now who have gone there and downloaded the document and guide and are utilizing it. Lots of positive feedback. I shouldn't even say lots of feedback. All the feedback is not only positive, it's sought after in a ravenous way. And if you're not convinced at the power, the transformative power of what this tool is, consider the people attached to it. Now, I know it sounds weird to say something like, well, you could have all these big names and it could be Buckus, right? But I really feel like the names that are attached to this are industry experts, both in and outside of Freemasonry. It's a real tool, a practical tool for a man, a woman, a Freemason today. Let me ask, you touched on the concept several times of being a free builder and freeing yourself. Would you say that the document allows you to work toward that? And then when you say to be truly free, can you expound on that just a little bit?
Sure. No, I'm happy to do that. Definitely the document and the guide already trigger. And in one of the examples that are illustrated, you know, using the methodology of asking, raising the key fundamental questions. So this concept of free will and accord, for example, we touch on it as one of the illustrated examples. But freedom in Masonry is something that is incredible. I mean, the name of our institution is Free Builder. And we say this is speculative. In other words, we're not talking about those, you know, old operative stonemasons. So what does it mean? I mean, what is Freemasonry going to teach me about freedom when I live in a country, basically the leader of the free world, a country that was built on the idea of liberty and has sustained it for now close to 250 years. So what added value does Freemasonry really provide? And in my case, then looking, approaching Freemasonry through that prism that we discussed and explained through the framework and the concept in these documents that you refer to, produced by the Masonic Legacy Society, the idea is the following. Freedom in the profane, and I here I'll be sharing my personal life experience with this, because Masonry is ultimately an individual journey that is conducted not in isolation, that is happening within a large structure amongst a community of brothers that are connected to what we call the mystic tie. So there is the individual work, there is the collective support mechanism, the mystic tie that connects us, but the transformation is happening within, internally within each and every member of the craft. So when we look at freedom, say from the profane perspective, so there's, you know, freedom to speak, freedom to move, freedom to associate. So it's freedom to or freedom of, like freedom of the press. And with those freedoms come negative and positive energies. In other words, freedom can be used to destroy or to build. Freedom can be used to divide or to unite. Freedom can be used to help bridge gaps or create more divisiveness. Freedom can be used to promote more hatred or bring about more loving communities. And of course, one would say in the profane, you know, how you use your freedom would be one way or another, okay? And there could be good usages and bad usages of freedom. Fine. So, where does Freemasonry come in? Freemasonry teaches the individual Mason using those tools to relieve himself or herself from those things that would typically lead the human person to exercise that negative energy. In other words, these are the protective mechanisms that enables the Mason to build the shield and have the resiliency to constantly reject and keep out that negative energy. So while we know in freedom you can do this or you can do that, Freemasonry equips the person with the ability to remain truly free and a builder. Now, true freedom also, as to me in my life experience with it, it has helped me, Freemasonry has helped me understand that certain behaviors that one thinks are done because the person is free, in fact, they are chaining the person and enslaving the person's mind or soul. For example, if my brother were to do something to me, and my brother, in doing that to me, I felt hurt, insulted, hurt, slighted, and if I were to react, to try to make a point, prove something, or counter, or maybe get back, that kind of behavior, whether it is at the level of my thoughts, at the level of my words, what I end up saying to him, or my actions, my deeds, due to him, whatever it is going to generate a counter-reaction, because that's the way things work, you know, cause and effect. And one action causes a reaction, and the reaction would cause another reaction. And you end up getting into a cycle where I find myself hostage, you know, getting stuck in a vicious circle of reacting and counter-reacting. And then I ask myself, where's my freedom? I'm stuck. I'm like constantly responding to this. And you know what? Somebody else has figured it out and can press my button and lead me into that cycle. No. I should not be hostage to that kind of vicious cycle of behavior. So I need to not get into it in the first place. And the tools, whether it's the compasses, whether it is the plum, whether it is the level, whether it is the square, and all of them on my tracing board applied with fortitude and prudence. These help me not get into that kind of vicious circle type of energy in the first place. So if I don't act that way and I act no matter what I had received, if my response, my action, my conduct, my behavior is driven by the plum, the level, and the square, I move on and there is no more any vicious circle of any kind. And I therefore, I am free to focus on those things that I want to do. I am free to go about my building, whatever it is that I am building, my inner temple, my very community, and not waste 1 ounce of energy on that viciousness.
I was just recently going through Grand Lodge proceedings as part of research, but I see time and time again references to Grand Lodge orations in where they are decrying the use of far-reaching, unprovable kind of notions of esoteric thought. And they use the term symbologists who are looking to make a dime or whatever. And what I find interesting is a lot of that stuff that's tied to it, whether we have brothers who are into it or not, I'm into some things. But what I find fascinating about this entire project, Akram, is that it's practical. It's real psychology. It's changing the mind of the builder in the way that he needs to change it to do those things, to free himself, to better the community, and work toward the greater construct, the greater betterment of humanity. We talk a lot about altruism in the craft, and I think that word isn't thrown out enough. And I think that's something that what we can do to give back is utilize our altruistic nature to put something together, to be able to teach something and to put it out there. And again, everybody, this is not something that's out there. There's no ulterior motive here. I was on Reddit recently where somebody had posted a link to this, and some people said, well, what's the catch? There really is no catch. The catch is that you use it and you light a fire and you help other people.
Yeah. Well, that is another direct aspect, consequence of the concept of freedom we were just talking about. This is being done with freedom. In other words, there's no catch. There's nothing expected in return. Absolutely nothing. And there is not even a single attempt or thought of whatever, okay, what's going to happen? What are you doing with this or not? It is pure freedom. And when one starts applying these true teachings of Freemasonry, and freedom is at the essence. In other words, every tool I should ask always, you know, try when meditating on the aspects of Freemasonry, at least I do, is how does this help me free? Right now I am facing this situation, whatever it is, personally, in my home, at work, with friends, family, doesn't matter. Where I am feeling now net free and getting, and how will this tool help me do that? Once one starts going down that road of freedom, everything becomes possible. And there is nothing expected in return. That is the power of Freemasonry. And then you don't even care about who gets credit for what, who does what, because it's about freedom. It's by freedom, and freedom by definition is empowering. And, you know, and if somebody takes Akram's words and put them and use them and plagiarizes them, whatever it is, who cares? Akram doesn't care. It's not about intellectual property. It's not about, see, it's a different concept. This power of freedom enabled us to come up with this approach to the Masonic Legacy Society. Without it, it would be like every other kind of organization. We're not even an organization.
Yeah, that's true. That's one of the key things that we've always, as many of the people who are involved with this, as we necessarily were doing planning and getting everything together, we would start, somebody would go, okay, then should we do this? And then somebody would go, No, that's what we normally would do if this was an organization. This is a free platform, free as the sun, free as the air you're breathing. There is nothing to tie this to anything. We thought about, oh, do you establish a bank account for it, or what do you do? Nothing. There's nothing at all attached to this. So, yeah, it's totally free for everybody out there. And it is transformative. One of the exercises that some people out there might think, you know, well, what's a testimonial for this kind of thing? And, I know this might sound weird, but I'll say that when I do meditations, typically when I'm done with them, when I'm thinking about working tools or whatever the case is, as we guide through, when I come out, I will, draw what I saw or write it down. And I think one of the most interesting things that happened to me utilizing the guide is that when we use it, I find the things that I'm seeing are so much more decipherable, if that makes sense, because I'm contemplating on strictly Masonic concepts. And the Masonic concept is what we've tied it to. It's what my brain is used to. So I'm able to visualize, I'm able to conceptualize a lot of the things that come to me during these reflective sessions. So take that for what it's worth. I hope you guys want to check that out. So Akram, one of the things I wanted to ask you is, aside from the project of Masonic Legacy Society, as somebody who has had an amazing journey in Freemasonry, we've got a lot of listeners to the program that find a relief in the Lentz Canyon podcast because it's what they were quote-unquote looking for in Freemasonry when they may not have found that right away in the craft, or they still haven't found it, or whatever the case may be. And so for those Masons who have some seeking left to do, if you could give those a piece of advice to some of our more frustrated brethren, what would your piece of advice for them be?
Well, let's say, I think there are a couple of things that I would share and I think will go a long way to help the seeker in Freemasonry really interested in what we are talking about, be able to go about that, feel fulfilled, and not at all frustrated. The first thing, keep the focus on the ritual, on Freemasonry. Often what happens, one is attracted, intellectually attracted, to all kinds of interesting theories. How about getting and see what the Kabbalah is doing? What about Indo-Rosicrucianism? What about in Martinism? What about this or that? All these are very interesting. And if the person is willing and has the time and would like to explore them, I would definitely encourage the person to do so. But if the Mason is going to those bodies, tries to go into those traditions in order for him to understand Masonry, then he's going to be even more frustrated. The answers to Freemasonry lie squarely within the ritual of Freemasonry. So that is first fundamental, because otherwise, as I mentioned, you may feel frustrated, you may think the answers are somewhere else. The answers are within, and it's the same way for the transformation. It is not by seeking intellectual information about from the outside. The true transformation happens within yourself. So Freemasonry has within its own ritual everything to unlock that internal transformation. That's the first very important piece of advice. The second one, once you start applying this approach to Freemasonry, the transformation that happens within you will create that freedom that I spoke about earlier. And once you start feeling that freedom, you will no longer be frustrated, because outside expectations do not matter as much. What matters is your growth. You're able to work, to give of yourself, to impart knowledge, to diffuse light, not expecting anything in return. And when you do so, you have a much greater impact. It is not the intellectual debate. It is not by trying to convince people through a discourse and a debate that it is going to change. Absolutely not. The true change is when you're doing the good work with that concept of freedom, spreading that brotherly love, magic happens. Magic happens. And you will get that satisfaction from seeing that without ever expecting anything in return. The key thing is you become a free builder, not to be a person who others are going to like and tap on the back and keep praising you. It's not about vanity. It's about making you, from within, a stronger, more beautiful, and wiser person that nothing can shake. And that, my dear brethren, my dear listeners, that is worth gold. And once you have that, nothing, I don't care what it is, nothing can take it away from you.
I can't, I just sit here, I could listen to you talk all the time. I hope all of you get so charged by this, because there are few people out there who can deliver a rousing speech on the spot, like Akram has. So, you know, I've been in the room where you've been randomly called on to give a speech. It's always amazing. And I personally, just in a lot of debt for what you've done for the craft and for Freemasonry and for helping us put together the Masonic Legacy Society. So first and foremost, Brother Akram, I just want to say thanks.
Thank you, Brother RJ. Thank you for all the good work that you're doing. Thank you for being an integral and essential part of the Masonic Legacy Society, and thank you for having me on your show.
Everybody out there, I want to encourage you to head on over to MasonicLegacySociety.com. I'll, of course, have links in the show notes for everything that we've talked about. So everybody out there, I want to say that if you're in the Washington area, Washington, D.C. area, Virginia, anywhere around there, Maryland, if you get a chance to go to one of the talks that Akram has been doing, I would love for you to get to it. If it's on Skype or once lodges open up, make it a priority. You won't be sorry. I also want to say that if you're interested in anything on the Masonic Legacy Society, you have any questions, those questions, anything you do, I'm the webmaster for it. So if you send any emails or whatever, they're going to come to me. And that gets a large priority. So I usually get back to everybody within 24 hours. So just know that. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out. Akram, Brother Akram, illustrious Brother Akram, I just want to say thank you one more time, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Brother Archie. Look forward to it.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that interview. It was a pleasure and an honor to have Brother Akram on the program. He is a super busy guy, as you can imagine. He does work in an industry, primarily with the United States, so you know where his passion comes from. I really do encourage you all to check out the Masonic Legacy Society website. Languages are all there. You fill out a constant contact form on our website. You'll get the document and the guide via an email that comes from MLS Custos, so the Custos, at MasonicLegacySociety.com. It is a constant contact form. That means it will likely end up in your Gmail promotions folder, or it could go to your spam. So please check it out. It has never failed to send the email. I know some people will say that they didn't get it. You did get it. I guarantee it. But it got filtered somewhere. So if you run into any issues, please don't hesitate to reach out to me and let me know if you're having troubles. Also, if you have feedback or you're interested in anything related to it, shoot me an email and we'll get you all set up. We had great people who assisted in the promotion, in the accumulation of the knowledge presented. I think you all will really enjoy it. And as Brother Akram said, it is worth more than gold. So with that, I invite you to check that out. I want to thank one more time our producers, our fellows, our contributors who make this show happen every single month, every week, every year. If you want to learn how to be a contributor, fellow, or producer, head on over to WCYpodcast.com. Click on Support the Show. You can help us out through Patreon or through PayPal, whichever you choose. And thanks again. And don't think I forgot. I did mention that I would be having Brother Gerald Fortune on the program. We had to reschedule. He had a conflict, so I hope you don't mind. We did push his interview back just a little bit, but we will have him on soon. So, with that, we'll talk to you all next week. Until then, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition. We'll be right back.